Welcome to Listen To. This is Ted. The news was published on Tuesday, October 1st. Joining us today are Eric and Kate to discuss a fascinating new medical technology.
Thanks for having me, Ted. I'm excited to dive into this groundbreaking development in stroke risk assessment.
Happy to be here as well. I'm looking forward to a lively discussion on this topic.
Today we're discussing a groundbreaking new technology that could revolutionize stroke risk assessment. Let's start with the basics. Eric, can you explain what this device is and how it works?
Absolutely, Ted. This nifty gadget is like a high-tech headband that's packing some serious laser power. It's not your average accessory, though. This baby uses infrared light to peek inside your brain and check out how your blood's flowing. Imagine it's like a tiny traffic helicopter, but instead of hovering over highways, it's zooming through your blood vessels, giving us the 411 on traffic jams and speeding cells.
While that sounds impressive, I'm concerned about the safety of shining lasers into someone's brain. Isn't that potentially dangerous? I mean,
whoa,
we're not trying.
Hold your horses there, Kate. I get why you might be worried, but there's no need to hit the panic button. This isn't some sci-fi death ray we're talking about. The infrared light used is totally safe. It's the same kind of tech used in other medical imaging. It's more like a gentle spotlight than a laser beam. Think of it as giving your brain a nice, warm, infrared hug. No zombies or mind control here, I promise.
Fair enough, but how accurate can this really be? Surely traditional methods are more reliable. I mean, we've been assessing stroke risk for years without zapping people's brains with lasers.
Interesting points. Let's dive deeper into the methodology. Kate, what's your take on how they tested this device?
Well, they used a simple breath-holding test. It seems a bit too simplistic to me. How can holding your breath for a minute accurately predict stroke risk? It's like saying we can predict heart attacks by seeing how long someone can stand on one foot. It just doesn't add up.
Actually, Kate, it's a lot more sophisticated than you're giving it credit for. The breath-holding isn't just a party trick. It's a clever way to stress test the brain when you
hold
your
breath. But
couldn't
other factors affect those results? What about anxiety or pre-existing conditions? It seems like there are too many variables to get a clear picture.
You're raising some valid points, Kate, but the study wasn't done willy-nilly. They actually used the Cleveland Stroke Risk Calculator to separate participants into high and low-risk groups beforehand. It's like they pre-sorted the apples from the oranges before even turning on the fancy headband. This way, they could see if the device's readings matched up with what we already know about stroke risk. Spoiler alert, it did.
Eric, you mentioned vessel stiffness. Can you elaborate on why that's important in stroke risk?
Sure thing, Ted. Think of your blood vessels like rubber bands. When we're young, they're nice and stretchy, bouncing back easily. But as we age, those rubber bands start to lose their snap. They get stiffer, less flexible. This stiffness is a key player in the stroke risk game. It's like trying to pump water through a garden hose versus a steel pipe. The stiffer the vessels, the harder your heart has to work, and the higher the risk of a blockage or rupture. This groovy new device lets us measure how well those vessels are grooving, expanding, and contracting. It's like a dance-off for your blood vessels, and we get to be the judges.
But isn't age just one factor in stroke risk? What about diet, exercise, and genetics? It seems like we're putting all our
You're absolutely right, Kate. Age is just one piece of the puzzle. Diet, exercise, genetics, they're all part of the bigger picture. But here's the cool thing about this device. It gives us a real-time physiological measurement that we can use alongside all those other factors. It's like adding a high-def camera to our toolkit of binoculars and magnifying glasses. We're not replacing the other tools. We're enhancing them. This device could be the missing piece that helps us see the whole picture more clearly.
Let's put this new technology into historical context. Can you think of a similar breakthrough in medical diagnostics from the past?
Absolutely, Ted. This reminds me of the introduction of the electrocardiogram, or ECG, back in the early 1900s. Before the ECG came along, diagnosing heart conditions was like trying to fix a car engine by listening to it from across the street. Doctors had to rely mostly on symptoms and guesswork. The ECG was a game changer. Suddenly, we could see the heart's electrical activity in real time. It was like getting X-ray vision for the heart.
That's a bit of an exaggeration, Eric. Doctors had other methods of assessing heart health before the ECG. They weren't just...
You're right, Kate. I didn't mean to imply doctors were completely in the dark, but the ECG truly revolutionized cardiac care. It allowed doctors to see the heart's electrical activity in real time, much like this new device shows us brain blood flow. It's like going from a black and white TV to full color HD. Sure, you could watch shows before, but now you can see every detail. This new brain device could be the ECG of stroke risk assessment.
I see your point, but the ECG took years to become widely accepted. How do we know this new device won't face similar skepticism? It's not like doctors are going to throw out everything they know and start using laser headbands overnight.
Interesting comparison. Kate, can you think of any potential drawbacks to this new technology that might mirror challenges faced by the ECG?
Well, like early ECGs, this device might be too expensive or complicated for widespread use. Plus, there's always the risk of over-reliance on technology at the expense of clinical judgment. We don't want doctors forgetting how to use their own brains just because we have a fancy new toy to look at other people's brains. And let's not forget the learning curve. It took time for doctors to fully understand and trust ECG readings.
I have to disagree with you there, Kate. This device is described as portable and affordable. It's not like we're asking every clinic to install an MRI machine, and it's meant to complement, not replace, clinical assessment. It's like giving doctors...
But the ECG required extensive training to interpret results. Won't this new device have a similar learning curve? We can't just hand these out like party favors and expect every doctor to become an expert overnight.
Not necessarily, Kate. Here's where things get really exciting. The researchers are working on incorporating machine learning to analyze the data. It's like having a super smart assistant that can quickly make sense of all the information. This could make interpretation much simpler and more accessible, even for doctors who aren't specialists. Imagine having a genius intern who never sleeps and can instantly spot patterns in the data. That's what AI could bring to the table here.
Eric, you mentioned machine learning. How might AI change the landscape of medical diagnostics compared to past breakthroughs?
Great question, Ted. AI has the potential to be a real game changer in medical diagnostics. It's like giving doctors a superpower. AI can process vast amounts of data quickly and accurately, way faster than any human could. This could lead to more precise diagnoses and personalized treatment plans. Imagine if we could spot patterns across millions of patients and use that to predict and prevent strokes before they happen. It's like having a crystal ball, but one based on hard data and science.
But AI isn't infallible. There are concerns about bias in AI algorithms and the potential for errors. We can't forget the human element in healthcare. What if the AI misses something?
You raise a valid point, Kate. AI isn't perfect, and we absolutely shouldn't remove the human element from healthcare. But think of AI as a powerful tool in a doctor's toolkit, not a replacement for the doctor. It's like having a really smart assistant who can crunch numbers and spot patterns, but the doctor still makes the final call. And as for bias, that's something researchers are actively working on. The goal is to make AI a helper that enhances human expertise, not replaces it.
Looking to the future, how do you see this technology developing? Eric, what's your vision for the next 5 years?
I'm optimistic, Ted. I believe this technology will become a standard part of annual checkups. It's non-invasive, quick, and provides valuable data. We might see it integrated into smartwatches or other wearable devices. Imagine getting a daily stroke risk assessment just by wearing your watch. It's like having a tiny doctor on your wrist, keeping an eye on your brain health 24/7. This could be a real game changer in preventive medicine.
That seems overly optimistic. There are still many hurdles to overcome, like regulatory approval and physician adoption. I think it'll take much longer to become mainstream. We can't just slap these devices on everyone.
I understand your caution, Kate, but I think you're underestimating the potential impact here. Sure, there are hurdles, but the benefits are huge. Regulatory bodies tend to fast-track technologies that show this much promise. And as for physician adoption, once doctors see how this can improve patient outcomes, I think they'll be eager to get on board. It's like when smartphones first came out. Soon enough, everyone wanted one because they saw how useful they were.
Interesting perspectives. Kate, how do you see this impacting healthcare disparities?
Well, if it's as affordable and portable as claimed, it could help underserved communities. but I'm concerned it might actually widen the gap if only wealthy areas have access. It's like when a new wonder drug comes out. Great if you can afford it. But what about everyone else? We need to ensure this technology doesn't become another luxury item that only the rich can benefit from.
I disagree. The researchers specifically mentioned its potential for communities with limited access to advanced medical facilities. This could be a game changer for rural healthcare. Imagine bringing this level of diagnostic power to remote areas.
But what about the infrastructure needed to support it? You need trained personnel and data analysis capabilities. It's not just about having the device, it's about having the whole system in place to use it effectively. We can't just drop these off in rural clinics and expect magic to happen.
You're right that we need more than just the device, Kate, but I think you're overcomplicating it. The device is designed to be user-friendly, and with AI assistance, interpretation could be straightforward. It's not like setting up a full hospital. Think of it more like introducing smartphones to areas that never had landlines. It leapfrogs over the need for complex infrastructure and brings advanced capabilities directly to the people who need them.
Let's consider potential challenges. Eric, what obstacles do you foresee in widespread adoption?
The main challenge will be integrating it into existing healthcare systems. We'll need to train doctors, update protocols, and possibly revise insurance policies. It's like introducing a new play into a well-established sports team. Everyone needs to learn their new roles and how it fits into the bigger strategy. But once it's integrated, it could revolutionize how we approach stroke prevention and treatment.
I think public acceptance is a bigger issue. People might be wary of a new technology, especially one involving lasers and brain scanning. It's not like we're asking people
to try. That's where education comes in, Kate. Once people understand how safe and beneficial it is, I believe they'll embrace it. It's like when MRIs first came out, people were skeptical at first, but now they're a standard part of medical care. We need to focus on clear, accessible information about how this technology works and what it can do for people's health.
You're assuming everyone has equal access to that education. We need to consider health literacy and cultural factors, too. Not everyone has the same level of trust in medical technology, and some communities might be more hesitant than others.
Thank you both for this enlightening discussion. It's clear that this new technology holds great promise, but also faces significant challenges. As we move forward, it will be crucial to address issues of accessibility, education, and integration into existing healthcare systems. Only time will tell how this innovation will shape the future of stroke risk assessment and prevention.